Okay, Rabbeinu Bechai, Parshas Miketz. So Rabbeinu Bechai begins with the Pasuk in Mishlei, Perek Gimel, Pasuk Hei. It says, B'tach al Hashem b'chol libecha v'el binascha al tishayin. Trust in Hashem with all your heart, and don't rely on your own understanding. So Rabbeinu Bechai explains that Shlomo Melech is telling us to never trust in ourselves and think that we are the ones that provide us with our parnasa, or that it's our own brains that made us successful at whatever we do. Rather, as the pasuk says, "Rabos machshavas b'lavish v'atzas Hashem yitakum." Whatever you're thinking is one thing, but what Hashem wants to happen will happen. And he also quotes the other pasuk in Koheles, "Kilo la'kalam hamirotz v'lo la'gibarim hamelchamet." It's not for the fast, and not for the strong to win wars, and not for the fast to win races. Rather, it's up to Hashem. And then, lo la nevo nemosher, not smart people don't necessarily get rich. Below gamla lo yodim chen, not everybody who's charismatic wins. Because anyway, Hashem runs the world. So a person should trust in Hashem with their whole heart, and not rely on themselves, think that it's their own brains that cause them their success. And Rabbeinu Bechai adds that he thinks that's why it says B'tach El Hashem. It doesn't say B'tach Ba Hashem like we find in other psukim here. It says B'tach El Hashem. Trust to God. What does it mean to trust to God? It means a person's whole thinking should always be about Hashem. That's the full B'tachon. B'tach El Hashem. To trust to Hashem, meaning all your mind and heart are filled with bitachon in Hashem. And he says a full tzaddik doesn't need to do any hishtadlus. Doesn't need to try to figure out how he's going to be successful. He can just rely on Hashem. That's a full super tzaddik. Like his example, he mentioned this last week, of Eliyahu HaNavi, who the ravens brought him food, and Yosef HaTzaddik, who, since he was on a high enough level of bitachon, he should have trusted in Hashem that he would have used the Saramashkim and Sarofim to save him, but not try to not himself go over and ask them to do it. And therefore, that's why he had to stay in jail another 2 years. Again, he mentioned this week, and he's beginning from Mishlei, and saying the Musar from Mishlei, and that's how we get into this beginning of this week's Parsha, that he was stuck in the jail for another 2 years because he didn't have the right bitachon, and then through the dreams, he was able to get out. Okay, so we start with Vayhi Miketz Shnasayim Yamim. So Rabbeinu Bechai begins right away. What in the world is Shnasayim Yamim? 2 years. It should have just said Vayhi Miketz Shnasayim. What does Yamim mean? So he says Yamim means it was exactly 2 years to the day. Yamim, like exactly 2 years to the millisecond, or at least to the day anyway. Okay, then we have Paro is always called Paro, which I guess seems normal, at least to me, but he wonders why he's not often called Paro Melech Mitzrayim. In fact, sometime, once, really, in Pasuk Memvav, we have Yosef, Paro is called Paro Melech Mitzrayim. It says, V'Yosef ben Shloshim Shana, B'amdo lifnei Paro Melech Mitzrayim. So he wonders why Paro, in the rest of the story, is just called Paro, and not Paro Melech Mitzrayim. So he says, because Paro wasn't much of a king, his whole kingdom would have been destroyed if not for Yosef. So in the one pasuk when it mentions Yosef, Yosef ben Shloshim Shana b'amdo v'nei Paro Melech Mitzrayim, there it mentions his Melech Mitzrayim because it was only because of Yosef that he was stayed Melech Mitzrayim. Otherwise, his whole kingdom would have been destroyed if not for Yosef. Okay. Then he talks a little bit about dreams in general. Obviously, we've been very dream-centric over here. With Yosef having dreams, and then the Saramashkim having dreams, and then Paro has a dream. So he talks a little bit about dreams, and says that, how do you know if you're having a dream that's relevant, that means something? So he says, well, it depends. If your dreams are coming from, sometimes you eat the wrong food, and you know, all kinds of weird stuff come to you in your head, that's not a real dream. If you were thinking about something all day, and then you dream about it, that also doesn't mean anything. But if you have a dream that's not typical and didn't come to you because you had something weird for dinner and made you messed up, or you weren't thinking about it all day, and you have a strong dream about it, I mean, you could picture it clearly. And I would add, even though he doesn't add this, it's not because you happened to be woken up in the middle of the night or had a nightmare necessarily. But you know what? I guess it's sort of dream that's strong with you. He says it's a nevuah katana, and then he says that's why we Gemara says that Nevuah was taken from Klal Yisrael and given to Ketanim and Shotim, that's because we, when we sleep at night, are the same like Ketanim and Shotim, that we don't have other thoughts coming into our head that would mess with this pure thought that may be coming from our neshamas. So children don't have those things blocking them, so they can more likely have these little Nevuahs, which I guess they're... Anyway, that's what he says. It's called a Nevuah Ketana. And he says it has nothing to do with being a tzaddik. You don't have to be a tzaddik to get a dream that's relevant. You could be a super Rasha, like Paro. You'll see, by the way, throughout this parsha, it certainly seems like this, the Rabbeinu Bachai understood in his learning of the parsha, it's Machlokas, obviously, in the Midrashim, but that this Paro was the Paro. You know, the Paro of Yosef was the Paro of the Egypt, you know, of Sheba Mitzrayim too. It was not an actual new Paro. It was the same Paro of the time of Yosef. So anyway, which makes this guy a super Russia. You see that you don't have to have be a tzaddik to get dreams that are relevant. Hashem just sends it to whoever he wants to send it to. Okay, so in the dream, Paro says he's al hayor. Well, the pasuk says that Paro dreamt that he was al hayor. What's interesting is we always, you know, read the story of the dream of Paro and wonder why it's repeated so many times. You know, first the pasuk tells you what Paro dreamed, then the pasuk tells you Paro repeating what he dreamed back to Yosef. The whole story is repeated, and then Yosef tells it back to him. It's repeated many times, but Rabbeinu Bachai points out there are differences from the way the Torah described the dream to the way Paro described it to Yosef, and then from the way Yosef described it back to Paro, which are all very relevant. Here's number one. So the Torah tells you, Paro dreamt, Paro cholem, hine omed al hayor. He's standing al hayor, on the river. Look at when Yosef says it back to him. He says, Vayomer Paro Yosef, chalom t'chalam t'pishirin oso. And he says, here's the dream. Bachalomi vaydaber Paro Yosef bachalomi hinene omed al svasayor. It doesn't say al hayor. It says al svasayor. In Paro's dream, the Torah tells you he dreamt he was on the or, which sounds like on top of the or. And then when Paro tells the story to Yosef, Yosef says, when Paro tells it to Yosef, Paro says, I was standing at the ridge, edge of the river, not on the river. So Rabbeinu Bachai explains that Paro, like the Midrashim say, made himself a god. He told everybody he was God. He was God over the Nile. And that he said, I created the Nile. And that's a pasuk in Yechezkel. It's interesting to look up that pasuk in Yechezkel in general for this parsha. It's in Perek Chavtes of Yechezkel. That whole parak there is relevant to this story. This corner bit of my. And there in pasuk Gimel, it says, Li Yaori Vani Asisini. That's what Paro said. I created the Yaor. So that's why Paro dreamt that he was on top of the Or, because that's what he thought of himself as, on top of the Or. But when he was telling the story over to Yosef, he was, Rabbeinu Bachai says, embarrassed. And so he said, oh, I'm on the Svasa Yor. But that's not what he actually dreamt. He dreamt he was on the Or, because he was a Rosh and a Balgaiva. And if you look in the details of the way Paro describes his dream to Yosef, and the way Yosef says it back, it's not quite exactly the same. Little details. But Yosef, of course, got it right, and Paro wasn't saying it exactly perfect. Not always, doesn't sound like Rabbeinu Bachai that it was always because he was embarrassed. That's an example where he on purpose changed it. But other times, because he was all tzeflagin or all b'bahala that about this dream, so he didn't tell it over exactly correctly. When Yosef repeats it, it is exactly correct. And then when Paro says to him, Acharei hodi Elokim kol zos, right, when Paro says back to him, well, after Hashem told you all this, I see there's no one wiser than you. That's what he meant. After Hashem told you all this, meaning I can see that God told you this because you were saying things that you couldn't have known because I said it backwards and you said it correct. You know, I didn't say it exactly perfect. And you did say it perfect. So I know, it's like Rabbeinu Bachai says, it's like you were in my dream. I know you saw it, so that's how I know Hashem helped you with this. And to go a little out of order, by the way, while we're talking about him saying Hashem helped you out, that was part of this story. Yosef knew that Paro didn't believe in the Rabbeinu Shalom running the world. Again, especially if you keep it, this is the same Paro. Paro said, Mi Hashem Asher Eshma Bekolo. Paro didn't believe in a Rabbeinu Shalom. He believed in the Kochav, in the Mazalos, the astrologies, that the, you know, the constellations were, you know, ran things, but not that there was any one God who was in charge of things. Things just happened. And there were powers in the world, like the stars and the moon, but none of that had any real thought. Or cared, or you know, and it was just the world ran as it ran with the whatever kochos there were in the world, but there was no God. So Yosef, in the entire speech back to Paro, says the word Elohim over and over and over, Elohim, Elohim, Elohim. Why did he use that shame? So Rabbeinu Bechai explains, because he was trying to tell him that there is a Ribbono Shel Olam. That's how I know this, and that's why how you got this dream to help you out to save the to save the Egyptians. And he used the word Elohim because that's how the Torah starts, Bereishis Bara Elohim. So, and it ends, Maisa Bereishis, Asher Bara Elohim La'asos. So that's why he used that shame. He was trying to tell him, there's the Ribbono Shel Olam who created this world. That's how I know what's going on. That's how come you got this dream that's going to save your people. Okay, now, the Paro's magicians, or his Chartumim, whatever, his dream interpreters, didn't chap what the message was. If you look in Rashi, Rashi says the poteros, they tried to come up with explanations, but Paro didn't buy it. They said he's going to bury his daughters, and Paro said, "Nah, it's not quite right." So Rabbeinu Bechai is actually surprised. How did they not chap? Like, isn't it obvious? We're talking about it was on the Nile. The dream was right on the Nile, which is where Egypt's parnasa came from. The dream was about, you know, wheat. And then the cows that plow the wheat. And it gets swallowed up by bad wheat. Wasn't it pretty clear? Why would you think it means burying your seven kids? Like, or whatever the story was with the burying of the kids. Why didn't they hop right away? Of course, it's obviously about Parnassa, that there's going to be, at least getting in the general ballpark. They thought it was about his daughters dying. Like, well, how did they not hop? He's like, he's shocked. How could it be the Khartoum and didn't hop that this was about a famine? And his answer is, because Hashem made them not chap. In other words, they should have. Yes, of course, it was an ace. That sometimes Chachamim don't get things right. As the Pasuk says, even by Chachmei Yisrael, Mishiv Chachamim Achor V'daitim Yisachal. Sometimes Hashem makes it that wise people don't have the right answer and make mistakes. That's because Hashem wants something to happen. So Hashem made an ace here, that they made a mistake, and they didn't chap. Again, I believe the Gemara refers to that also by Chachmei Yisrael, that Hashem wants him to make a mistake because he wants a punishment to happen. He has the same thing happen. Okay, now again, as I mentioned it again, Paro, it's the same Paro of the future Paro of Sheba Mitzrayim. So Rabbeinu Bechai points out that this dream was Al Hayor to let him know, this is the beginning of the end for you, Paro. It looks like not so bad, but it's going to be the beginning of the end because you started with the Or, but this is the beginning of the Tzaras, because then you're going to end up being hit by the Or with all the Makas that happen by Or, and eventually you get your nation, is your armies, everything's destroyed in the water. Okay. He also, Rabbeinu Bechai, points out that in the story of the Chalomos, there are the seven cows and the seven sheep. The seven sheaves, whatever, the wheat. So 7 and 7 is 14. The story is told over 3 times in the Torah. So 14 times 3 is going to be 42. And he says that was a remez to Paro, that his nation would be suffer for 42 years. The 2 years of the Ra'av, and then the 40 years later, that the world, that his country would be destroyed for 40 years. And where do you see that? That's again that parak in Yechezkel that I mentioned before says that the Mitzrayim was destroyed for 40 years. So parak Chavtas again, it says that the earth's Mitzrayim would be destroyed for 40 years. If you look over there in the Radak, he brings the same thing. Okay, next. Then we have the story of, and it mentions that Yosef is married to Asnas, and he just brings the medrash that Asnas was not really the daughter of Potipharah, it was actually the daughter of Dina. Dina as in Yaakov's daughter. Asnas was the daughter of Dina, who was Yaakov's daughter, and the child came from Shechem, and Shechem was Ma'anes Dina, so she got pregnant. She had a kid, Asnas, and she ended up being somehow, I guess, left. That's what it sounds like. And she was adopted by Potiphar, and that's why it's called his daughter, because he raised her. It's an interesting medrash to look up. I believe it's the Medrash Tanchuma that says this about Asnas. Asnas was Bas Dina. It's also brought by many of the Mefarshim. Okay, And it says, so he marries Asnas, Yosef marries Asnas, and he marries his first, I'm sorry, he names his first kid Menashe, Ki Nashani Elokim Mikolam Eli, Hashem made me forget my tzaras. So Rabbeinu Bachai points out that that's why, it's just very interesting, the Gemara always refers to your in-law's house as Beinasha, which means, he says, like this, the place you forget. Isn't that interesting? Why? Because it says, in Bereishis, Alken Yazov Ishas Aviv Imo V'Davak B'Ishto. You're supposed to, when you get married, you forget about your parents, and you get attached to Ishto. He says Ishto, of course, is Lav Davka, it's Ishto, it's both spouses, the wife and the husband. Once they get married, they're supposed to forget about what happened back in their old homes and start their new lives together. So that's why it's called Beinasha, which is interesting. Okay, then we have the story that the Yaakov and his sons, there's a famine in Canaan, so they need to go down to Mitzrayim to get food. And the Torah in this parsha refers to food repeatedly as shever. Why is that? So, of course, the shever, you know, also means food. But why the choice of the use of that word here, shever? So he says two things in different places in this parsha. I'll just tell you them both here. Again, it's shever, avon, batechem, that kind of thing. So he says, because the Torah is telling you, number one, that a person should only eat lishbor ra'avono. A person shouldn't eat just for taiva, just for fun. A person should only eat lishbor ta'avono, the ra'avono, to break your hunger. In other words, eat when you need to, and not just for fun, like we Americans do. And the other reason it says that is because when he was sending his children down to Mitzrayim to get shever, that it would be a shever for them. In other words, that would be the beginning of the Golus. He kind of saw that somehow and knew it was the beginning of the Golus. But he says, go down to Mitzrayim. Yaakov says, go down to Mitzrayim, get the shever. And v'nechi avelo namos, that was to tell him, even though it was the beginning of Golus, we will live and not die. And that's Ladoros, Rabbi Nebuchadnezzar says, that even though we go down to Golus and there things aren't always good, nechi avelo namos, we're never destroyed. Okay, so then it says that the brothers of Yosef went down to Mitzrayim. And remember all the Midrashim, Rashi brings it that they went down besides to get food. They were going to go try to get Yosef back. So it says, Vayerdu Ache Yosef Asara. This is incredible. Listen to this. Rabbeinu Bachai says, the reason it says Ache Yosef Asara, the brothers of Yosef 10, it's because they went down 10 so they could daven for him with a minyan. You got that? They should daven about Yosef, Ache Yosef Asar, meaning the 10 of them went down, so they could daven for the safety of their brother Yosef to be returned to them with a minion. That's Ache Yosef Asar. Incredible. Okay. And then he brings the Midrash that they went down to Mitzrayim, and Yosef figured they might be coming. So he told the people in charge of the gates of Egypt, anybody who comes down looking for food, take their name and their father's name down. So this way he would find out who's coming. So they did that. He found out that his brothers were coming to Mitzrayim, but they never showed up at the actual granary. So after 3 days, he sent officers to look, well, you know, what happened to them? They came through the front gates, but they never showed up at the granaries. So after 3 days, he found them in a shukshel zonos. Why? Because they were looking for Yosef, because they said Yosef was a good-looking man. Maybe he got messed up in Egypt, so they went looking for him in the shukshel zonos. What's fascinating about this is, according to this medrash, it was 3 days. Meaning the brothers of Yosef came down because they were starving, they had no food. Or they're going to be starving. Instead of doing the first things first, you would think they came to get the food first, then go looking for Yosef. They went to look for Yosef first. 3 days they didn't find him. They were looking for Yosef. So they were sincere about their quest to find him. Okay. Then we know the whole story. They meet Yosef, and Yosef talks to them tough. And he calls them spies. And then he says, Chei paro kimiraglim atem. He swears in the life of Pyro that they are spies. So Rashi tells us that any time that Yosef wanted to swear falsely, he would say, Chei Pyro. And he says it twice. Once he says, Chei Pyro, that you're Meraglim. And once he says, Chei Pyro, Im Teitu Mizekim Bevo Achichem Hakaton Hena. So again, Rashi says that it's whenever he swore falsely, he said the Chei Paro. Rabbeinu Bachai rejects that. He says, can't be, don't tell me Yosef, he doesn't want to hear that Yosef swore falsely, period. So he says they're really always true. Every time he said Chei Paro and he swore, it was true. Yosef didn't swear falsely, even in anybody's name. So he just wouldn't swear falsely. So what does it mean that he swore they were spies? They really were spies. What does that mean? According to the Medrash, they came down. He asked them, what are you guys doing here? Why'd you come in different gates and all this stuff? Oh, we were looking for our brother Yosef. Oh, you were looking for Yosef, I see. What if you would have found him? What would you have done? They said, oh, we would have... Rashi brings this medrash. We would have been po'd to him. We would have redeemed him for any amount of money people would have asked. And he said to them, oh, I see. And what if they wouldn't have released Yosef for any amount of money? What would you have done? They said, Alzeh banu laharo galeharig. If we would have waged war, we would have killed them. Yosef said, okay, that's exactly what I said. You're a spy. You're here to spy out where Yosef is, and you're going to kill everybody if they don't give you what they want. That's exactly what I said. You're meraglim. You just admitted it. You were here for war, possibly. You came to spy out, see what's doing, and then start a war. That's meraglimar. That's number one. And that which he said, Chei Parim Teitzum Yizeh, they didn't all go. He kept Shimon. Right, when he swore to them that they swore in the name of Paro that they wouldn't leave, and they didn't all leave. Shimon stayed, so that's why he wasn't swearing falsely. Okay, so they put them all in jail for a few days, and they realize it's all because of what they did to Yosef. So the brothers say, "Aval Hashemim Anachnu," they recognize that they were wrong. And Al-Kain ba eleinu hatzara hazos. Al-Kain, so the Pashup Shad in Al-Kain is because of this, because we didn't listen to our brother who was crying out to us from the pit. Al-Kain, therefore, ba eleinu hatzara hazos, this tragedy happened to us. Rabbeinu Bechai explains that's not what Al-Kain means. Al-Kain means it's correct. It's correct. Like the Pasuk Kain benos tzlavchod dovros. Kain means correct. So it's Al-Kain means it's Al-Pidin, it's correct. In other words, they're being matzdik alayim esedim. They're recognizing their sin. Okay. Then we have Yosef took from them Shimon to stay behind. And it says, it doesn't say that Shimon volunteered. It says, Vayikach mi itam es Shimon. Vayasar asolei neim. So he brings the Yerushalmi that learns from here that if Goyim come to a city and say, give us one Jew and we'll leave the rest of you, you can't give any Jew over. You can't do it. They have to all die. If they say, give us Ploni, then you can give him over. So since Yosef never said, give us Ploni, he just said, one, you got to stay. So therefore, he had to take them. That's why it says he took Shimon. Okay, so the rest of the brothers go back to Yaakov, and they say, tell Yaakov that the Yosef, or they didn't know it was Yosef, the king told us there, the viceroy told us we have to bring back Binyamin. Yaakov says, nothing doing. And so they wait around till the food runs out. That was Yehuda's plan. And then they went back to Yaakov and says, look, we're all going to die if we don't go. So let's take Binyamin Misafik. At least maybe we won't all die. If we don't go back to Yosef, then we're for sure all going to die. So he just brings the Rach, who points out that how much covered, Rabbeinu Chanan points out here, how much covered they had for Yaakov, that they all let themselves get up to the level of starving and didn't like just start screaming at their father. Rather, they let themselves get to the point of hunger so that because their father should agree because of the great covet they had for Yaakov. Okay, anyway, they come back to Mitzrayim and Yosef invites them for dinner and he tells Menashe, Tvoach Tebach Ve'achen, which Chazal Darshan that he said, Shechtet Ve'achen means do nikur, take out the chalev that we can't eat. So Rabbeinu Bechai just adds another pshat, another thing V'hachin may hint to is that he was saying that they should come over for Shabbos. Because V'hechinu et asher yaviu refers to, right, that pasuk, but you have to prepare for Shabbos. Lashon V'hechinu, so that's what he says V'hachin means. That's a remez to Shabbos. He was inviting them over for the meal for Shabbos because Yosef kept Shabbos. And he says, V'yochlu b'taharayim, we'll eat in the afternoon. So Rabbeinu Bechai says, this tells you the gnus of kings, meaning anyone who should be being osik b'tzarchi tibur, who eats in the morning. You're supposed to eat in the afternoon, at least if your job is to be osik b'tzarchi tibur. Because you got to take care of stuff first, then you can go eat. Regular people can eat earlier, but someone who's in charge of tzarchi tibur, he has to take care of tzarchi tibur first, and then he can eat. I mean, not in the late afternoon, but not right in the morning. That's... Yochlu b'tzaharayim. That's when kings are supposed to eat. That's a Gemara in Shabbos Daf Yud, by the way, that says that Talmidei Chachamim eat at that time. Anyway, people are also Ptzar Chitzir, but they eat in the afternoon. I would just add, the Chazal seem to tell us Pas Shachris is important, so that's, I guess, the Pashup Shabbos for regular people. But okay, let's go weiter. And then it says, "Vayismahu ha'anashim." Yosef sits them down, and the Medrash, right? It says that he knocked on his cup, and he set everybody according to the proper age. That part is a pasuk. It says that he sat them all according to the proper age. The Medrash says, right, that he hit his goblet. And through that, he told them where they should all sit. And it says, "Vayismu ha'anashim yisra'eu." Everybody was surprised how he was able to do that. So Rabbeinu Bachai wants to know, this doesn't sound like such an exciting trick. I mean, he was in a land of Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim had all kinds of tricks that through Nichush. So why were they so surprised that he had some kind of black magic? It's Egypt, after all. So he answers that they thought this was not Kishuf, they thought this was Chachma. Meaning, this is very interesting, there's a thing called Perek Shira that many of us are aware of. And in Perek Shira, it says all the different shira that the animals do and the wheat does, right? The frog says, I think, Baruch Shem Kavod Baruch Hu, but I think, I don't remember them all, or I maybe even got that wrong. But each animal has its own shira that it sings, and the wheat, it says, has a shira. What does that mean? So Rabbeinu Bechai explains that the noise that they make, there's a dibur to that. It comes from their malach that's in charge of them, but there's some element of dibur if you knew how to interpret what you're hearing. And they thought that when Yosef was hitting the cup, that noise, the clang that they heard, you could, if you knew what you were listening to, you could interpret it. And they thought that's what that was. And that was what they were shocked. They'd never seen that before. That's what they were surprised about. Anyway, so he, you know the story, he gives them their food, and sends them on their way, and he sticks the cup in Binyamin's sack. And what's interesting is he brings this medrash that when Yosef sends someone after the brothers to say, "Hey, how come you stole my cup?" and they find it in Binyamin's sack, based on the medrash, they actually blame Binyamin. They really thought he did it. Unbelievable. They thought he did it. That's what it says. And because of that, Rabbeinu Bechai has a whole midah keneged midah, that Binyamin tore his clothing, and because of that, eventually his son Mordechai had the schus of tearing his clothing of a kali. So a whole midah keneged midah with what they suffered, and he suffered because of this business. But it's a fascinating medrash that they actually thought it was Binyamin. But they knew they were innocent, and that's why when they came back, in other words, they themselves, not Binyamin, were innocent. That's why when they came back to Yosef, they said, "We know we didn't do anything, but we're willing to be slaves." Okay, one last point, which is Rabbeinu Bechai points out that almost in the entire story, the brothers of Yosef are never called the brothers of Yosef. They're always called Anoshim. Why? So he says, because the whole story of Yosef is also a remez to the Anoshim that would have to suffer because of their sin. And that is the Asara Harugei Malchus. Most of us know this from the Kina, that the Asara Harugei Malchus were killed by the Romans as a punishment for the sins of the brothers of Yosef who sold Yosef. So now, these Asara Harugei Malchus did not all die in one shot. It was over many, many years. But the 10 that died were a kapara for the sin of Yosef. And he brings a whole medrash here about that the Tsar of Esav had accept upon himself that he would get knocked. He'd get hurt in the end of days. He would get zapped because of doing the Asara Harugei Malchus, and he still wanted it. You can look at the medrash yourself if you want. I'm sure it's hard to understand on a simple level, but that's what it says. That these 10 were given over to be a kapara for the sin of the 10 brothers, and it sounds like that they were a Gilgal of the 10 Shvatim. And in fact, Rabbeinu Bechai points out that much in this parsha is a remez to that, that these were all Gilgulim, because it says, "Kilule hismamanu zeshavnu pa'amayim," Yehuda said, if we not had waited, we'd have come back twice. It says later on in the parsha, when they, at the end, like we're up to here at the end, when they're brought back to Yosef, it says, "Vayeshuvu ha'ira," And he says, it doesn't say Vayeshuvu Mitzrayim, it says Vayeshuvu Ha'ira. Ha'ira refers to the ear. Katan Vanashim Ba'amat, they were returned back to their bodies. So the Asura Harugi Machos were a kapara. Sounds like they were a Gilgal of the Ten Shvatim, and then it ends off. Tem Alulu Shalom Alavichem, that once they got to Kapara, their souls could go back to their Father in Heaven, B'Shalom.